Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, the 21st of November. The time in West Africa is 7:05. Here in Germany, it's 8:05. A very good morning to you. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, chaos erupts in Nigeria's parliament after police prevent the Speaker of the lower house from chairing a debate on the state of emergency in the north.
I have decided that I will shut down the National Assembly until Tuesday next week. Both the House of Representatives and the Senate.
And Germany donates 120 vehicles to the Cameroonian army. They are to be used in the fight against the Islamist sect Boko Haram.
This present of vehicles is a small effort from our part to support the efforts of the Cameroonian armed forces.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Nigerian police fired tear gas inside Parliament on Thursday, apparently trying to block opposition lawmakers from entering for a key vote on security. In the fracas, the Speaker, David Mark, closed down the Assembly.
I have decided that I will shut down the National Assembly until Tuesday next week. Both the House of Representatives and the Senate.
Members of the lower house threw out a government request to extend emergency rule in the northeast region hit hardest by the Boko Haram insurgency and announced that the special powers had expired. The country's main opposition party had said it opposed prolonging the state of emergency, describing it as a complete failure that had failed to curb Islamist violence. So now that the state of emergency has expired, what options are open to President Goodluck Jonathan? I put that question a few moments ago to our correspondent in Abuja, Ben Shamang.
Mark, it is clearly spelled out in the Nigerian constitution. Apart from being the president, he is commander-in-chief of all the armed forces in Nigeria. So the constitution still allows him to deploy troops where there are conflicts. The same, there's also what they call the Armed Forces Act. This equally empowers the president to deploy soldiers or troops to where there is a conflict. And apart from that, we've seen that it was done in the Niger Delta area where troops were deployed without necessarily going to the National Assembly. It was done during President Obasanjo's time. It was done also during Umaru Yar'Adua's time in the Niger Delta area.
It appears that Nigerian politicians are playing politics with the insurgency. Is that a fair assessment?
It is definitely a very fair assessment, you are correct. Because if you check, those who are saying no to the extension are mostly those in opposition party, talking of the All Progressive Congress. And those who are saying yes to it are actually from the ruling People's Democratic Party and some other parties that have a sympathy for the government of the day. So Nigeria is polarized. The fight against insurgency is polarized in line with politics, political lines.
Northern Nigerians don't seem to support the extension of the state of emergency. Could the same be said of the south of the country?
Well, the South rather feels that the power should be given to the president to ensure that the insurgency is routed, bearing in mind that they said when the crisis was in the Niger Delta, there was no state of emergency so declared, but soldiers were deployed. Why is it that in the north, okay, it has reached an extent that there is total destruction of property and lives. Yes, drastic actions will have to be taken. But surprisingly, it's the northerners that are feeling the impact. It's the same northerners that are opposed to this. Again, it is the line of divide between politics of north and politics of south.
Ben Shamang in Abuja. Let's take a closer look now at how developments are being viewed in the north. As our correspondent Muhammad Al-Amin reports, many reservations were being expressed about prolonging the state of emergency in the run-up to Thursday's vote.
The extension of emergency rule in northern Nigeria has been received by stiff opposition from politicians and ordinary Nigerians in the affected states of Adamawa, Borno, and Yobe. Northern Nigerians believe that the emergency rule imposed by Goodluck Jonathan's led administration to tackle Boko Haram in the northeastern part of the country has been an outright failure.
I am Baba Abubakar. The state of emergency imposed in the northeastern state is of no advantage, is of no significance. Before the state of emergency, the situation of the insurgency attack, the rate of the casualties is minimum. But when they impose the state of emergency, the rate of attack and the casualties, the damage are tremendously increasing.
My name is Ahmed Aliugire. Some will say the government is trying, but those of us that have seen the real picture of this thing, we have not seen anything that the government is doing to curb this problem. So my view on this state of emergency is, let the president find another alternative.
Boko Haram militants have seized and held many communities and towns in Borno, Yobe, and Adamawa state since August. Fighting between the militants and the army has left many civilians dead, while women and girls have been abducted. Abdullahi Inua, a human rights activist, believes that emergency rule has done more harm than good.
There is no basis for the extension of the state of emergency, because it is evidently clear that the state of emergency have created more harm than good to the people of that area and Nigeria in general. So actually, from what is going on the ground, we are not in support of any further extension.
But for Mark Mijinyewa, a political analyst, believes that if the government changes strategy, the extension of the emergency rule will definitely yield positive results.
It's a welcome development as long as there will be some changes. Change in the way they handle the situations. Change in the kind of ammunition they are going to supply to the armies, sophisticated ammunition that will be able to face the insurgents. And then maybe logistic arrangements should be put in place as well. These soldiers must be paid their dues. They are sacrificing their lives for the safety, for the protection of this country. And whatever is their due should be given to them. Logistic approach must be changed as well.
And that report was compiled by our Northern Nigeria correspondent, Mohammed Al-Amin.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Germany has donated 120 vehicles to the Cameroonian army. It intends to use them in its fight against Boko Haram. The vehicles were handed over at a ceremony in the capital Yaoundé in the presence of the German ambassador to Cameroon, Klaus Ludwig Käferstein. Our correspondent, Maki Kinseka, was there.
Cameroon's military played for a large crowd of onlookers, including diplomats, senior officials of the Cameroonian armed forces, and a cross-section of government ministers who had gathered to witness the handover of 120 tactical operational vehicles donated by the German Ministry of Defense. Colonel Jean-Jacques Fouda says the intention is to use the vehicles in the fight against Nigerian terrorist group Boko Haram that has been frequently attacking Cameroon.
C'est pour apporter une certaine souplesse.
This will make it possible for our forces deployed in the north to be able to destroy or eradicate Boko Haram. Some of these tactical vehicles have a firing capacity that enables them to destroy and cut down even branches of trees at a distance of between 800 meters and 2.5 kilometers. So if there are enemies and enemy weapons within that range, there will be total destruction.
Face aux hommes et au matériel, c'est la destruction totale.
Colonel Fouda says Cameroonian soldiers have been trained to operate the German vehicles, which are designed to function in any terrain, including desert areas like North Cameroon, which shares a boundary with Nigeria's Borno State, the stronghold of Boko Haram.
20 drivers and mechanics were trained in the German town of Bremen to use the vehicles in all sorts of attack scenarios.
The German ambassador to Cameroon, Klaus Ludwig Käferstein, was also present at the handover ceremony.
We are following events linked to Boko Haram in Nigeria, and we have seen that Boko Haram has become a threat for Cameroon too. And Cameroon has been an island of stability here in the region and plays a major role in keeping this stability in this important area of Africa. So our wish is to support the efforts of the Cameroonian government to keep peace, to install peace in areas where peace is not there. And this present of vehicles is a small effort from our part to support the efforts of the Cameroonian armed forces. And we very much appreciate the work they are doing in the north of this country.
The 60 jeeps and 60 UNMOG trucks, 10 of which have been transformed into combat trucks with machine guns, were received by Cameroon's defense minister, Edgar Aleme Bengo.
Je voudrais une fois de plus saisir cette occasion pour prier.
May I urge the ambassador of the Federal Republic of Germany to express the gratitude of the president and people of Cameroon to the people of Germany for this important gift that will significantly help in the fight against terrorism and all forms of insecurity that our country faces. This gift will improve the efficiency and boost the morale of our forces deployed in the war zone.
Qui vont donc rebooster encore l'efficacité et certainement le moral et l'état d'esprit de nos hommes sur le terrain.
Mbengo said some of the equipment will be used against Central African rebels who cross over and launch attacks on Cameroonian territory.
Nous avons le front de la partie septentrionale.
We have two main areas of interest: northern Cameroon, where we are constantly attacked by Boko Haram, and eastern Cameroon, where we share a border with a troubled Central African Republic.
La République centrafricaine.
Germany is the second country to provide Cameroon with equipment for use in the fight against Boko Haram. The Chinese government recently handed over military equipment and money.
Mark Ikenseka reporting.
Human rights.
Anti-human trafficking advocates are calling on the Ghanaian authorities to intensify efforts to put an end to the trafficking of young girls who were forced to work abroad as slaves or sex workers. This follows reports of young girls and middle-aged women being trafficked from Ghana to Kuwait. Many of them, who are now stranded in Kuwait, want to return home. One of the girls who managed to escape back to Ghana has been sharing her story with our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kelechi.
I had to work hard to earn the trust of this human trafficking victim before she finally agreed to talk to me. Due to privacy concerns, she requested to be referred to as Ikria. The 23-year-old lady spent 2 months in captivity in Kuwait since leaving the country in July. To make matters worse, Ikria had to pay about 900 euros to an agent to enable her travel to Canada. But she explains she only found out about her final destination in Kuwait at the last minute.
I was taken to some house to work as a house help. Yeah, so I worked there for about a month. So it was time for the woman to give me my salary. When the woman gave me the money, I said not to work again. Do you know what? If they take us to Kuwait, they use us as slaves. So we work for the agent. They get more than us, we, the people who work. So I wanted to come back to Ghana. I cried a lot.
Though she was promised a 200 euros monthly salary, Ikria only got half of that. But her ordeal didn't end there. At one occasion, she had to jump out of a moving vehicle to escape a sexual assault from her employer.
It was 11:45 in the afternoon to 12. When I got to the car, then the man asked me to kiss him. I said no. So I asked the man that, why are you taking me to stop the car for me to go to the office? The man didn't mind me. Yeah, so he parked the car somewhere. Then the man was forcing me in to kiss, and I said, no. So he moved the car as if we are going to his house. So the car was going, then I came out from the car, just opened the door. The car was moving, but I came out from the car and then left my phone in the car, and I quickly ran to the office.
In order to escape a similar incident in future, Ikria returned to Ghana with the financial help from friends. But she's now jobless after leaving her hairdressing job. Asabia Daku is an agent who helps Ghanaians wishing to travel to Kuwait. She refused to talk to me in person about the issue of human trafficking and also denied the Ikria's allegations against agents in a telephone conversation.
What I want to tell you is that there is a lot of agencies in Kuwait, from Ghana to Kuwait. As for my people, I don't have problems. Before I try to get a visa for somebody, I will make a lot of inquiries so that person won't go and get stranded.
Many young people, like Ikuia, are still languishing in Kuwait and other foreign countries. So what can Ghanaian authorities do to stop the practice? Tatiana Katluyarinku is an expert on human trafficking.
By monitoring the employment agencies, one, and educating people through media and letting them know that all of this actually is nonsense. It's people just literally trying to take advantage of you and, you know, sending you into slavery. Also, I think airports, immigration, etc., need to monitor, you know, who's going out and alert the different authorities, etc., and stop them from going.
Isaac Leche filed that report. The United States is offering a temporary haven to citizens from Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, protecting them from deportation to their home countries for a period of 18 months. Now, Ebola has badly shattered those three countries, exposing lethal weakness in health services and disease surveillance. It has also raised broader questions about African governance and human resources. Deutsche Welle's Catherine Matai spoke to Professor Oiwale Tomori, a leading virologist and president of the Nigerian Academy of Science. She began by asking him for his assessment of Africa's response to Ebola.
Given the fact that Africa has had Ebola since 1976, it shouldn't catch us unawares again. When it does come, it shouldn't take us that length of time to know that we have Ebola. For example, the situation in Guinea, the first case was supposed to be in December 2013, but the world never wasn't aware of it until about March of 2014. That's 3 whole months. If we have had a good disease surveillance in place in many of the African countries, this would have been detected as quickly as possible. I mean, see the case in DR Congo this year. It took them less than a week to detect the fact that it was Ebola. In Nigeria, the good thing we have was that we had a lab that was there that could detect that this was Ebola within 48 hours. And that made all the difference. All of Africa, you find that the issue of disease surveillance, laboratory development has been abandoned by many of our governments. And this is where there's an apathy. And then when eventually people knew that what it was initially, many of the governments were denying that it was not Ebola. Or they were saying, it's not my problem, it's the problem of Guinea, or it's the problem of Sierra Leone, and that kind of thing. But then when we now have the whole problem in our hands, we were totally incapable of handling the situation. So all that combined, the apathy, the unpreparedness, all added up to what we have in our hand right now.
So those countries which are concerned are extremely poor. Do you think that it's a question of money?
You know, when people raise that, I go back to the issue of how did they become poor? What were they fighting over? Were they fighting for some values? Were they fighting for what they were fighting for diamond? These are the issues we should consider. When people keep talking about poverty in Africa, a lot of poverty in Africa is misplaced priority. There are certain basic essentials that any government should be able to provide for its people. Good schools, good clinics available to people. Take the health workers, for example. Simple gloves. How much would that cost that African countries cannot provide for their health workers? And yet you find a head of state who will come to a meeting in New York and they stay in the best hotels. These are issues that we're talking about. It's not a matter of poverty. It is how well you spend the money you have.
So let's look into the future. So can you identify any lessons learned by African countries to tackle possible Ebola outbreaks in the future?
To be fair to you, I'm not optimistic because we've had so much opportunity to learn from the past. And we have not. But I'm only hoping that this may be a turning point has come because of the devastation we're suffering now. Any right-thinking leader should be able to say, look, this should not happen to me again. And therefore, if that be the case, take the Ebola epidemic in DR Congo. At the same time, they were having their own, wasn't it? But over the years, they've learned the lesson, proper diagnosis, having a laboratory in place, and, you know, ensuring immediately they did the diagnosis, they knew what to do. And put all the sanitary infection control processes in place. You cannot put infection control processes in a place where you're not putting money into those things, when you're not buying gloves for your workers, when you're not paying the salary of your health workers. Every year, money must go into this area for the sake and for the security of the people.
Professor Oyewale Tomori.
Your say.
And it's time now to hear what you, the listener, have to say about the stories we've been reporting on here on Africa Link and on our website dw.de/Africa. Before we went on the air, Isaac Mugabe was joined in the studio by Abubakar Jalou.
Hi, Isaac. It's good to be back in the studio with you. Ebola has been making news, and the death of the seventh doctor in Sierra Leone has had many of our listeners talking.
Yeah, it's really a pity. We reported that officials at a U.S. hospital confirmed Dr. Martin Salia, a native of Sierra Leone, had died of Ebola. The 44-year-old surgeon lived in the U.S. with his family before deciding to return home and help his country fight the Ebola outbreak when he caught the virus. He was then flown to Nebraska Medical Facility for treatment.
We received a lot of tributes from so many people for coming in there for Dr. Martin Salia. A few of them read, Ebert Bartelmes wrote on our Facebook page, said, "This is what I call a hero. Rest in peace, Dr. Salia." Rahadia said, "May he so rest in eternal peace." And Magita Arroyo said, "I am so, so sorry." Biki, however, was very critical, saying, "The treatment should have begun at Nebraska when he began showing symptoms and not wait for his test result. How could a much older woman of a different ethnicity got treated in every way and she lived to tell the tale?" Biki is referring there to Nancy Wright Ball, the American who tested positive and got treatment. Dr. Salia should have been given the same urgency as that elderly woman. Should raise factor in the resistance to the Ebola virus. Nevertheless, rest in peace, Dr. Martin Salia.
Indeed, yeah.
It's a very sad thing.
It's very sad that he had to pass away. And what else, Abu, have you got for us?
And now to Kenya, where a group of men stripped a woman for wearing a miniskirt, and that sparked a huge debate on Twitter under the name #MyDressMyChoice.
Yes, indeed. We reported that thousands of protesters gathered in Nairobi, Kenya on Monday to rally in support of the woman who was assaulted and stripped by a group of men for wearing a miniskirt. The #MyDressMyChoice movement wanted to stop attacks against women that are allegedly wearing indecent clothing.
This story became a huge social media sensation.
And what are some of the comments that really
We picked it up, and then Rebecca Sarah Riley said, "Why do men in any society think they get to tell us what to wear or judge us on what we wear? There is nothing wrong with my female body. There is no reason I need to cover it up. What I wear doesn't give any man the right to disrespect me, because there is no crime in being female, and there is no rule that I must cover up my female form in order to be respected." Francis Chocolade wrote in response to Rebecca, saying, "I wish I could like your comment a million times." Charles Mogo from Kenya said, "This is very sad, especially coming from a continent that didn't wear clothes until the 19th century. Yes, our great-grandmothers only wore a small piece of goatskin, but nobody raped them. I think the problem is the retarded males of these days."
Amazing comments.
Indeed.
Yeah,
that's how I call it today. That's all from me, Isaac.
Abubakar Jalou, who was joined there by Isaac Mugabe. And you too can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending a text message to country code 49 160 957 59510 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And your say will, of course, be back at the same time next week. And before we close this edition of Africa Link, a look at our main stories. Chaos erupts in Nigeria's parliament after police prevent the House of Representatives speaker from chairing a controversial debate on the state of emergency in northern Nigeria. The German government has donated 120 vehicles to the Cameroonian army, which wants to use them in its fight against the Islamist sect Boko Haram. We've also been hearing about the plight of women and girls who have been trafficked out of Ghana. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Assumpta Lartis will be here at this time on Monday. Do join her if you can. Have a pleasant weekend. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.